This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
OO Portland, thanks for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis. The time is 11:30.
Tune into Between the Covers every Thursday at 11 a.m. to hear interviews with locally and nationally known authors from both fiction and nonfiction. Between the Covers, only on KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is KBOO Portland. It's the Radio Zine now. I'm still Stephanie Potter again. And our next topic concerns the efforts to enhance wildlife habitat and safeguard continental-scale wildlife corridors. My guest, who is speaking to us from Arizona, is Kim Vaccariou. He's the Western Director for the Wildlands Network, and their mission is to ensure a healthy future for nature and people in North America by scientifically and strategically supporting networks of people, protecting networks of connected wildlands. So, Kim, we have you on the phone right now, right?
Yes, you do.
Thank there you are. Stephanie. And just get as close to that phone as you can get, and we'll sail away here. Kim also coordinates the Western Wildway Network Initiative, and his organization has partnered with a fellow named John Davis of Trek West. And Davis is trekking about 6,000 miles through a chain of mountain ranges right now that stretches from Mexico up into Canada. And we're going to be talking a little bit about that with Kim and then just everything to do with wildlife corridors. And if people want to call in, the phone here is 503-231-8187. So, Kim, just first of all, welcome to KBOO, okay?
Thank you very much, Stephanie. Glad to be here.
And just to get going about the Trek West program, you helped organize and design that, right?
That's correct.
And what's actually involved with that?
Well, it's as you say, it's a 6,000 mile what we are calling a conservation adventure trek. And you mentioned John Davis, who is has gained some notoriety for his other treks that he's taken to promote conservation issues. In particular, one he took in the East a couple of years ago. the purpose of this trek is to build a groundswell of support for creation of incentives and other legal mechanisms to identify and protect wildlife habitat corridors.
And so how far has he, how has he trekked so far? How far has he gone?
Well, right now, John is trekking through the Weminuche Wilderness area in southwestern Colorado, and he's approaching the 3,000-mile mark of his trek.
So he's about halfway through.
Approximately.
And how is he actually traveling? I know he's walking, but he's also doing other ways of getting across?
Right. He actually started his trek in northern Mexico on horseback as part of a traditional cabalgata, which is basically a horse parade. And he is also, of course, hiking, and probably about 75% of his mileage is through hiking. But he's also been paddling, rafting. He's been what he calls slogging through very deep snow as well. On occasion, we have to transport him by vehicle to get him to certain trailheads. But he's using a number of different methods of traversing.
And as he goes, he meets with people along the way. Small groups, large groups, to get them to support this whole idea of the wildlife corridors?
That's correct. In fact, so far, John has made 10 major presentations in various locations along the Trek West Trail. And his next major event will be in Aspen, Colorado, and that'll be followed by other events in Denver and Laramie and Jackson, Wyoming, and he'll end his trek in Fernie, British Columbia on September 30th.
Well, let's get into why wildlife corridor protection is so important. I mean, this is something that you're kind of almost devoting your life to, right?
I guess you could say that, yeah. Well, it's critically important. Well, for one thing, my organization, Wildlands Network, for the past 20-odd years has promoted this idea of connecting large landscapes via wildlife corridors. And the reason this is so important is because currently we do have many protected areas in the U.S. and in Canada, but unfortunately those areas are no longer connected to one another due to many reasons that we could talk about. The problem that this presents is that keystone species, wide-ranging keystone species like bear, wolves, cougars, etc., require much bigger distances for traveling than are currently available within these small islands of protected areas.
So even something as big as Yellowstone or Yosemite, it's not big enough, really.
It's not really big enough. you know, it may seem big enough, but if these species cannot travel big distances to mate with other similar species, but yet with slightly different genetic backgrounds, the genetic strength of the species tends to dwindle over time, and of course, that results in the big bottom problem that we have, and that's this extinction crisis.
And, yeah, I read something that, like, for instance, animals on islands tend to eventually go extinct because of that. And in a way, we've created these kind of islands for our wildlife?
That's correct. That's a good way of looking at it, yes.
Yeah, so you're trying to get then corridors created. And to what extent are these corridors still intact right now?
Well, fortunately, in the West, and by the way, we are, John Davis is trekking through what we call the Western Wildway, which is the 6,000-mile-plus identified area. It essentially follows the Rocky Mountains and adjacent other mountain ranges and riparian habitats, etc., in a northward fashion. And fortunately, many of these are still intact in the West, and it could be that these are the very last of the big connected areas that we have in the United States. And so we do need to make sure that the areas that are already intact stay that way. But by the same token, we also need to make sure that areas that have been fragmented by highways and natural resource development, pipelines and canals, wind and solar transmission lines, etc., we need to find ways to restore and reconnect those areas.
So one of the things that John's trying to do, or that the whole Trek West thing, is to get people to sign on a petition for wildlife corridor protection. Could you talk about that just a second?
Sure. Actually, that's one of the top-line goals of Trek West, and that is to, as I mentioned, build a big groundswell of support for protecting wildlife corridors. And one of the tools that we've developed to help us reach that goal is a petition that you can find by going to trekwest.org and signing that petition. And at the end of Trek West, we'll be presenting that petition, which already has thousands of signers, to agency officials and other land managers and decision makers, as well as elected officials, to encourage them to recognize the importance of protecting wildlife corridors over large landscapes.
So we want to get millions of people to sign on. And they go, as you said, to trekwest.org to sign for this?
That's correct.
Yeah. And I just want to let listeners know you're tuned to KBOO Portland. We have Kim Vicariu on the phone talking to us about the efforts of the New Mexico Wildways and its partner Trek West to enhance wildlife habitat and safeguard large-scale wildlife corridors throughout the continent. And in a sense, like what your website talks about is that if these big species go extinct, then essentially it's going to affect human beings too. I mean, I think people tend to think that they can just live, the animals can live or die, it doesn't really matter, I've got my restaurants to go to and everything's fine. But your stance is that's really not the case, is it?
No, it certainly isn't the case. And that's another really important reason we're doing Trek West is because we have got to find a new and more effective way to explain the importance of the need to let these large species stay healthy. John is doing a great job of talking about this, but to answer your question, simple watershed health is kept intact by the presence of large species, for example, just due to the fact of their impact on the vegetation and the ability of the landscape to maintain its original water carrying qualities, etc. It gets a bit complex, but we're working on being able to point this out, that there is a definite connection between landscape health and human health.
Well, could you talk about that just a minute and maybe give an example?
Well, for example, in the case of we can use Yellowstone National Park as a great example, where wolves were exterminated there back in the 1930s. And following that extermination, the number of elk and deer just exploded there. And the result was that riparian areas, in other words, areas where there is a regular supply of water, streams and rivers, became heavily overbrowsed by elk, which no longer had to really look over their shoulders to make sure that a predator wasn't approaching. And after the extermination of wolves, elk no longer really cared about that, and they spent all their time with their noses down in the grasses, eating the willows and aspens and other types of vegetation that grow along the banks. So this then resulted in erosion increase, water pollution, the reduction in species such as beaver and fish, and as you can see, this cascading effect goes on and on downstream and creates an unhealthy situation.
So we need our big predators, basically. And it's not just big predators that use these wildlife corridors. They're like antelope and elk and other animals would use them as well, right?
Absolutely. It's certainly not limited just to these big predators. There are a number of keystone species that all have very important places in the health of ecosystems.
Yeah, basically everything. We need it all. You know, this idea that there's a species extinction going on now, the sixth greatest or something, it's pretty incredible to me. But then the part of it is then another goal that you have, I guess, is to get the animals moving on these corridors. And what's the issues around that? Because it sounds like sometimes they don't know where the corridors are, or they get blocked off from them or whatever.
Well, there's certainly some truth in that. And one thing that, of course, is halting these species from moving are these things that fragment their normal migration routes or travel routes. And those, there's quite a list of those, starting from something really obvious, interstate highways, for example.
Right.
The number of species that are killed on interstate highways every year is just unimaginable. And there's quite a bit of activity these days to build wildlife bridges across highways or also underpasses to help the passage of species. But other things that they're running into are oil and gas development, housing developments, pipelines and canals that traverse these critical territories. All of these things.
How do oil and gas developments affect the wildlife corridors?
Well, in the case of, for example, in Wyoming, where there is a huge boom in oil and gas development in the sage-grouse territory, And also that's pronghorn territory. Even though one might think, well, an oil well only occupies a small area, you have to think about what it takes to build that oil well. In other words, roads have to be built, and electricity has to be transmitted to the sites. So these things all combine together to create fragmentation.
And the sort of the whole commotion of it kind of spooks the animals, and then they don't want to go anywhere near any of that?
That's true. Depending on the species, the sound, the smell, and just general activity certainly does have an impact.
And then, of course, like as you said, housing developments, cities. I mean, it seems like, we've really clumped ourselves down like pretty much all over this continent. It's getting these changes going sounds like it could be quite a challenge. I mean, to like actually get people to move out of the way for animals.
Well, this is an important topic because our goal is not to have people move out of the way. Our goal is to make these corridors circumvent places that are clearly populated, and certainly we're not going to be able to change that, and there's no movement afoot to make people leave their properties or to relocate anybody under any conditions.
Right.
But
highway removal.
Yeah. We have, however, identified areas that are still really open or could be with a few changes to wildlife that wouldn't involve any type of relocation or other types of halting of human activities.
So there's definitely, and as you said, especially in the West, there's a lot of these places that are still working, and the idea is to just sort of preserve them.
Right. with just what seemingly could be just a little bit of extra effort on our part. And, you know, an example of that is private landowners, particularly large ranch-type owners, are now recognizing the importance of having these predators cross through their properties and are taking certain actions to allow that to happen. They're still able to graze their cattle or their other livestock, but they might do so in a lesser abundance, and they might also change the locations of where these where the livestock is grazing to simply just allow for also the movement of large predators.
So the kind of solutions then, a lot of what this work is about is finding out what the problems are, that sort of a problem, and then finding ways to solve them, and that's kind of the work that you're doing?
Absolutely, and it's really the kind of work that John Davis, our trucker, is really doing a great job at. He's meeting the obstacles that wildlife encounter as they move through these same trails.
Oh, so he in a way is like sort of pretending like he's a wild animal himself.
He's looking at these problems through the eyes of wildlife.
Aha, that's great.
And so coming upon these fragmentation problems, he's thinking about ways to change those. He's meeting with restoration ecologists. He's meeting with private landowners, asking them what kind of solutions they might have implemented to help connectivity continue to exist. And he's also meeting with other conservation partners who are in the process of several major projects to help maintain wildlife habitat connectivity.
That's great. This is KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and we're speaking with Kim Vicariou, who is talking to us from Arizona about the efforts of the New Mexico Wildways and its partner Trek West to enhance wildlife habitat, safeguard large-scale wildlife corridors, and just preserve not only this, all the other species that are on this continent with us, but us as well. And so you're basically then, the third goal of your whole program is to expand the existing network of people committed to doing this, right?
Absolutely. And by the way, although New Mexico Wildways is one of our key partners, what we're really working with, the overall group, we refer to as the Western Wildway Network.
The Western Wildway Network. Okay, thank you.
Sure. So yes, the final big goal of Trek West is expanding the network of what we call conservation collaborators. And they don't necessarily have to be conservationists or belong to any kind of conservation organization. Private landowners fit well into this category. It's simply people who we are trying to expose to a bigger vision about wildlife habitat connectivity and the health that it can promise to people as well, as you mentioned.
And so what happens then, like when you end up talking to a rancher, how do you tell a rancher that he should make a few of these kind of changes that you just mentioned? Does it goes easily, or do you run into resistance?
Well, I think it's probably a pretty wide spectrum of results. I would say that one of the key issues that John Davis has pointed out so far in his 3,000 miles is that overgrazing on public lands is probably one of the biggest fragmenting problems that he's run into. By the same token, he's also run into many ranchers who are joining together in certain areas to form coalitions that actually are trying to support wildlife habitat connectivity. The Western Landowner Alliance, which is a brand new group, is proving that to be the case. There is quite a bit of interest on the part of landowners to have healthy landscapes. It makes sense. And once they see the relative ease with which you can do this, even without conservation easements or anything else, just simple changes in private lands management by the owners can make a big difference. And so John is not only pointing out one of the big problems, but he's also meeting with individuals who are engaged in the solution to that problem.
That's great. And what about talking to the energy sector? Do they, like the people who are doing the fracking and the oil wells and stuff, are they as easy to deal with, or is there a group of them that's also trying to preserve wildlife corridors?
There is. Actually, when you think about it, much of this energy development occurs on private lands, and that the owners will lease to development companies. And so the owner does have certain control over what he's going to allow on his property. And if he has a set of criteria to follow, in other words, where roads could be built that would not impact the movement of wildlife, for example, he can definitely let these energy development companies know about that. And if they're interested in dealing with him, they would probably need to follow those instructions.
Uh-huh. So there's more power than I'd realized with the landowners. That's good. And they don't have to deal with it in terms of just, well, I have my mining rights, you know, and I can do what I want here.
Well, I'm not an expert on that exactly, but certainly there are going to be all different kinds of situations that result related to energy development. But the bottom line is that the more these big energy companies hear about the need for connected wildlife habitats, the more they're going to start thinking about ways to accommodate that.
And it sounds like for the landowners themselves, the idea that the land is healthier, that the water is healthier, all of that would, you know, enhance whatever it is that they're actually doing. And that's basically the message that you're getting across.
That's true. That's true.
And how about the Obama administration? Have you been helped by them or hindered, or how's that going with just what's going on in Congress?
Well, it's a mixed bag. Certainly, there have been issues that have occurred that have caused consternation amongst environmentally conscious folks. But for example, right now, the Obama administration is indicating that this big oil pipeline that would traverse certainly various wildlife corridors from Canada.
We're talking the Key West pipeline?
Yeah, the I'm sorry, the XL Key West.
XL Key West, yeah. Keystone, sorry.
At least he is he's looking at the potential impacts of that pipeline on climate change. And I do want to mention climate change here as a very key element in wildlife habitat corridor protection. Even though our scientists have drawn tentative boundaries around areas that we have identified as critical wildlife linkage components, one thing that we can't do is to predict what's going to happen in the future relating to climate disruption, as we call it.
Yes.
This type of disruption is going to affect the way wildlife move and where their habitats are even located. And so without knowing the actual future result of this climate change and disruption, we simply are faced with needing to expand these boundaries exponentially so that we can at least predict that there's a chance that wildlife will have room to adapt.
Right, like some animals may need to be going farther south or farther north, or they need to get lower down or higher up, or there's a lot of different issues for them with the changing climate.
That's correct.
Right. And so it sounds like there's a lot of challenges with this. Another thing that I know that you have sort of a specialty in, and we're starting to get low on time, but maybe you could talk about it briefly, is I saw that Davis had just like climbed over the wall between the U.S. and Mexico, but he pointed out that it's really got it's a hard thing for wildlife to get across. And you're trying to work to like halt construction on the wall between the U.S. and Mexico, the security wall?
Absolutely. That's another critical, you know, we mentioned a whole bunch of things here that fragment wildlife habitat, but the U.S.-Mexico border security infrastructure that exists is absolutely a classic showing how this fragmentation can occur. As you mentioned, when John was coming north from Mexico, he reached the wall at Naco, Arizona, and there it's about a 10-foot high solid steel barrier. And as a way to describe how easy it is for humans to get over that wall, but how impossible it is for wildlife to get across that wall, he and others quickly scaled that wall, probably in about 2 minutes with no real extra assistance. And so he really pointed out very clearly how difficult it is for wildlife to move through it, while in fact people can easily cross over it. And so it's a waste of financing. It's a waste of manpower and materials.
And it's a really big problem.
It's a huge problem. It is. And of course, as you know, the currently proposed immigration bill now includes huge amounts of money for building even more wall.
Oh, boy.
700 miles of double-walled fencing across areas that we know wildlife will be then permanently blocked from moving.
And humans can just cross in 2 minutes. This is insane. Yeah. Well, do you have any last words? And then we're going to have to hang up here.
Okay, well, all I would say is that if folks want to know what they can do right now to help this situation of protecting wildlife habitat corridors, they can go to trekwest.org and sign our petition that will help us bring this problem to the attention of decision makers and do a great deal of help for us. Also, you can follow John's activities on trekwest.org, and we highly recommend that folks do that.
And you also have a website for your Wildlands Network. It's Wildlands Network is twp.org, right?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
So trekwest.org to follow what's going on with John Davis. And I've been speaking with Kim Vakariu, Western Director of a director of the Western Wildways Network, and he's working to really protect wildlife corridors for you, for me, for all of us, and for all of the animals that use them. And this is all across, all through our whole continent. And of course, John Davis is traveling with trekwest.org to really bring the message home. This has been the Radio Zine for KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and I want to thank you for being with us, Kim, and I just want to thank everybody for listening.
Thank you very much, Stephanie.
Thank you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis. The time is 11:59. Coming up at 12 o'clock is Jazz Lives with your host, Nick Geffro.
You're listening to KBOO Noon News for June 26, 2013.
The Oregon Republican Party is supporting an initiative overturning the law allowing illegal immigrants to apply for special Oregon driving cards. Studies differ on the overall financial impact of illegal immigrants on the government, whether they represent a net gain, a net drain, or are negligible. The state's party chairwoman issued a news release from a list of reasons for the action, including the statement that the estimated cost of services for illegal immigrants before taxes is $1 billion. While first-generation immigrants are not eligible for Social Security and other benefits, their children are eligible. It is estimated that education and English language skills training make up nearly three-quarters of the billion-dollar estimate.
Under proposed immigration reforms being debated in Congress, some immigrants may have to wait 10 years to get access to health care benefits. Lawmakers say that if undocumented immigrants do not have access to federal health care benefits, adding them to the bill will burden local governments with the cost. When older immigrants do become eligible, their advanced age and failing health will make the costs even more burdensome. Immigrants with provisional status can obtain health insurance from employers once they have legal status, but many are unskilled and work for employers not providing health insurance benefits. These immigrants can access local community health centers, but this creates an overwhelming demand on these clinics. Some Republicans are threatening to kill the bill if immigrants are not held responsible for covering their own health care benefits, even after they become citizens. Critics of the decision indicate that many immigrants are eager to pay for affordable health